Welcome back to Untangling Web3. Today we're diving into stablecoins and their growing role in the crypto space. Joining us is Robbie Schwertner, also known as Crypto Robbie, a blockchain thought leader who advises major European and Asian companies on implementing blockchain in industries like retail, mobility, real estate, and energy. Robbie's insights reach thousands on LinkedIn, and he's even spoken everywhere from TEDx to the British Parliament. So let's dive in and explore how stablecoins are reshaping the crypto landscape. Welcome to the show, Robbie. How are you doing today?
Very fine. It was a busy, crazy day.
It's been crazy in crypto for sure. Like, we're recording this on the 29th of October, and it seems like Bitcoin is getting closer and closer to that all-time high. So let's just see, you know, where we're at in a couple of weeks' time.
Yeah. When I woke up in the morning, and of course, the first thing is mobile phone, check the price Bitcoin, of course. Wow. It actually, I expected this. That's what I call the
surprise, rumors. Maybe.
Buy the rumors of the election and sell the vote. Then,
let's see. It's a lot of things converging at the same time. And funnily enough, starting on talking about the price of Bitcoin, you know, everything surging at the minute, it's kind of antithetical to what we actually want to talk about today, right? So we wanted to discuss stablecoins specifically today, because that's something that we've touched on a few times in the episode before, you know, also in the wake of what happened with Luna and things like that in the past. But we haven't done a full episode talking with anyone about it specifically. So yeah, it's kind of the opposite idea, right? Instead of this massive volatility we're seeing, how do we get stable prices? So why don't we jump straight in there? How would you describe, give a kind of 101 introduction to stablecoins? How would you define them? How have we got there today?
Yeah, first, of course, it started with Bitcoin and with blockchain technology, where stablecoins are based on, the stablecoins we are talking about mainly today. So stablecoins are linked usually to a blockchain, and it's, of course, attached or pegged, how we call it, to a currency. Usually, and 99% of all stablecoins are pegged to the US dollar. The main reason is, and that's for blockchain in general and cryptocurrencies, you can make money programmable. You can put money directly into a code. And that's the big advantage. That's the advantage of blockchain in general, and in particular for stable coins.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good introduction. I think that's like the main point there is very much, it's taking that idea that we have in blockchain and crypto generally, of tokenization, you know, all the benefits we talk about with that. But specifically, you know, in stablecoins, the goal being, okay, we want some of these assets to not be mooning and pump and dumping all the time. We want something that we can transact in, you know, use in the classical kind of properties of money, right? Be a kind of stable store of value, unit of account, things like that. And that's why you see these assets, stablecoins, kind of pegged to fiat currencies, as you say, most typically the dollar. It's interesting that when you have these stablecoins issued, you know, that already introduces an issuer into the equation, right? So someone is creating these, bringing them into the world. And I have seen, you know, there, we'll get into the different types of stablecoins in the rest of the episode, but this has been actually one of the criticisms, I think, right, is that people can actually create many of them. Is there a cap? How well backed are they? You know, that they're kind of, it's kind of a benefit and a curse, right? What kind of, what's your take on the landscape of stablecoins right now? Because obviously many people have heard of Tether, and that's a maybe one you can talk to. But yeah, where do you think we are present day 2024 in the landscape of stablecoins?
I mean, the main reason is why we have stablecoins at the moment and why they are so popular is because cryptocurrencies are popular. And when you change back to fiat normal money, you enter the fiat world, and that's in many jurisdictions a taxable event. So then you have to pay taxes on your profits. In the majority of the countries worldwide, is a tax event only if you go to fiat. If you stay within the ecosystem, how we call it, within the blockchain-based currencies, and if you change Bitcoin against USDT, stable coin, for instance, Tether, then it's not a taxable event. Yeah, that's in the most jurisdiction. And we are from Varitvent, we have one of our companies is a tax, a crypto tax advisory. So we optimize tax. We do that a lot. We help people to pay the taxes, but as long as they stay within the ecosystem, no tax. That's the general rule. Of course, there's some transaction tax and so on. And that's the main reason. So it's not a wonderful technical surprise. It's not because it's so cool. Stablecoins are rather boring, I must say. Yeah? So it's the opposite. When meme coins are here, it's fun. Stablecoins are here. Yeah. So it's opposite. But it has its, of course, its right to exist. And I mean, stablecoins are in 24-hour trading turnover. It's always more than Bitcoin. It's always hits. Mm. It's on a hit list, number one. So stable coins are there for trading, first of all, for crypto traders. But in the long run, I see stable coins, they could replace normal money, cash money, fiat money, as we know it from. And why? Because we need money that is programmable. We are in the world of digital. We talk over the internet. Yeah, we use our devices. They are linked with apps. Yeah, but with money, cash, you cannot do this, and that's why we need a programmable money. It could be a governmental digital currency or a privately issued currency.
I'm glad you brought this up, Robbie, because like you said, it's a really kind of important landscape for all of this stuff. That's the big motivator for everything that's been crypto. You know, we want some kind of cash equivalent, but in the digital age, something where I have complete ownership, you know, in my pocket, in my wallet, someone can't easily take it away from me. And I also have the ability to have privacy around the direct transaction, similar to cash, but I want that in the digital convenience age, right? And that was the motivation for crypto. That's why crypto is booming. But like you said, one of the motivators was tax. And I do agree with that. One of the motivators for all this stuff is to avoid tax, right? Even though they're coming down. But the other one is volatility, right? Yeah, no one says it, but I think that's one of the truths, right? Yeah. But the other one is volatility. Like you talk about, when I say talk to enterprises about using crypto to, you know, actually transact and hold crypto, one of the big things are like, okay, well, what's it going to be worth in 5 years' time or a year's time? How do I base my, you know, day-to-day operations on crypto when the price one day is a dollar and the price the next day is 2p? You know what I mean? So that's another big reason why, say, stable coins have kind of come into their own. They have a lot of the similar kind of fundamental technical properties of crypto, but they have this pegging that we've talked about. And it's kind of like having the gold standard where, you know, people now just print dollars left, right, and center. How do we know how much it's worth day to day? A lot of people say, go back to the gold standard where it actually has some real hard asset that it's linked to that kind of keeps that volatility low. So you know how much roughly can ever be produced. And that's one of the main motivations in my mind for stable coins is that because you're linking these kind of digital assets that can be made overnight to something physical, you don't have this volatility. There's much like a less chance of these rug pulls. But like Jack said, with all the stable coins that are kind of coming in now, it's how much are they actually pegged? Is it a 1-to-1, which seems quite secure? Is it a 1-to-10, which seems less secure? And that's one of the big questions around how do you choose stable coins? How strong is that peg?
Yes. How strong is that peg? That was actually, the pegging means... What's pegging? I mean, I started my career working in developing countries or some countries in transition as for an NGO relief aid. And there they had currencies which are very weak. Hyperinflation was, I worked in Bosnia, I worked in Russia, in Chechnya, for instance, as relief aid in refugee camps. And in Georgia, for instance, Caucasus. And they had very volatile national currencies. So they were not stable. So these people considered their own currency not stable. What we call, if we come from UK with the pound, euro, US dollar, we are spoiled kids, or not even kids anymore sometimes. And we are spoiled in a way that we think US dollar is the end of the line. That's super stability. Euro is stable. And whereas other nationalities, they have to deal with high inflation currencies. And here, a stable coin linked to the US dollar, linked to on blockchain, with ensuring some privacy, brings some convenience. So stable coins are very popular in Turkey, Venezuela, Argentina, Brazil, where they have high inflation. So Nigeria, that's the overview. So country-wise, you see that these countries, they use the stablecoin to transfer money from the US to South America. They use stablecoins, usually. Sometimes Bitcoin, sometimes Ether, but they are too fluctuating. They're not stable, considered truly stable. With stablecoins, that works well. Now, when we come to who offers stablecoins, at the moment, it's so-called centralized companies. It has nothing to do with super decentralized blockchain-based public blockchain projects. It's a company, Tether, there's a company behind it, and they print the digital minting, we call it minting, digital currencies, and they promise that they have assets, collaterals, we call it, in the form of US dollar, bonds, whatever they say. I mentioned already Tether. The problem with Tether is that it's not 100% sure how these assets are really pegged. For currency-pegged cryptocurrency, stablecoins, usually it's a rate 1-to-1. So you have $1 you get from a customer and you give the customer, you give her or him one digital US dollar, Tether. Mm-hmm. So it's a give and take. Good. 1-to-1. That's very important. Some of these stable coins are pegged in a way that they are pegged to cryptocurrencies. And there the pegging is, for instance, the Bitcoin pegged, Ether pegged. There it's, of course, the pegging, but they're very rare. They're very rare. The reason
Can I jump in on this, Rob? Because I want to make a point there. It's like one of the difficulties I've seen with the stable coins is that the beauty of cryptocurrencies, everything is transparent and immutable, and you can all see it. That's one of the good things. It's publicly verifiable. So as soon as we start to like interact with the real world and physical goods, and we say, well, I've got this crypto asset or this asset on a blockchain that's now pegged to something like the US dollar, which is maybe hidden in an account in the Bahamas, you're like, how truly do we know that that is real, that those assets exist? Right, we see a lot of these kind of misbehaviors, like the FTX style thing, where we don't actually know where the assets are. And as soon as you start to extrapolate from blockchain, you get more risk, right? So that's why I'm quite intrigued by the idea of pegging to hard assets that are transparent on things like Bitcoin, because everything's on chain, so we can know it's a bit more reliable, I imagine, as well.
Yes, of course. I mean, with normal money, we have 100 years of tradition of linking normal fiat funds to gold standard. This ended in the 70s when they decided to depeg gold from the US dollar and other currencies, by the way. So the depegging happened already. The non-collateralization happened already in the real world, in the old world, to say. With the new stable coins, we have to trust Tether, for instance, the largest, by far the largest cryptocurrency, that they really have the funds, and that poses a risk. There are stablecoin rating agencies, like they have rating agencies for shares, for bonds, and so on, for currencies. Now we see the development of stablecoin rating agencies. I got the proposal of the Blue Chip rating agency. It's bluechip.org. Because I will invest there, so I disclose. I will invest in this stablecoin rating agency. There are others like S&P, famous in 2008 already. They became very famous in rating also banks, for instance. And there's Moody's, S&P, and Blue Chip. Whereas Blue Chip is the more Web3. They untangle the stablecoins, and what they do, we have economists on board. We have specialists in stable coins. They have a framework. They call it Smidge framework. You can find it on the Blue Chip homepage. And of course, they check collateralization, depegging, store of assets. They check a certain factors, certain parameters. And then they calculate a risk. And how they do it, they do it in old world terms. They do it in a way that they rate, for instance, PayPal stablecoin gets an A-. The USD coin today has a B+. And Tether, it goes to F. What would you guess if you don't know?
I'm going to say like a C or a D.
Very good. Tech?
I don't want to be accused of allegations. Yeah, I'd probably go C, D, or maybe even lower.
How friendly. They got a D. Yeah, and you can check online. Bluechip.org is just...
I'm not surprised by that one. Like the fact that like Tether made, what is it, $5 billion in profit last year, which is more than Blackstone, and the company's like 100 people or something like that, is absolutely mind-boggling. Not to undermine the project, but like when you're that profitable and you have that much money under the hood, you'd expect the entire security team to be like 500 people. But it just blows my mind that companies like that can be so profitable with so few people.
There is also a fun fact, because Paolo Arduino, he's the CEO of Tether. He complained that in Europe, this new regulation, MiCA, will pose a risk because then stablecoins come under pressure. But he forgets to tell us that Tether will have a risk because Tether must show their one-to-one assets, which they say they are in fiat, they have cryptos and so on.
Yeah.
So actually, these MiCA regulations of the European Union, which I like, it's a good thing.
Sure.
It's not overregulation. It brings order to where chaos was.
You would wonder why, right? Why would you be worried about these kind of regulations coming in? Because, you know, MiCA is relatively soft touch as well, as far as I can tell. And it's not particularly pervasive yet, but why would you be worried about that? And I kind of want to stay on this example of Tether for now, because, you know, you mentioned this idea of risk, and that's something that we should definitely look at for each of the different cases. And, you know, there's a lot to unpack already. So just kind of recap, we've got these stable coins. We can have them pegged to some other asset in many different ways. So we've got, as you mentioned, a fiat collateralized, fiat pegged. So to like a US dollar, for example, as Tether's doing supposedly. You have crypto collateralized, which you said is kind of a bit rarer, but that I think the kind of notable examples people might have heard of is like MakerDAO. That's kind of where you have another crypto asset that's the collateral in the system. Then you have physical ones. You can have kind of physical commodities attested to, like Pax Gold. And then you have, you know, hybrids of all those. And then you have the kind of, in my mind, the really kind of scary Wild West with the algorithmic stable coins that we can talk about later. But yeah, we've got all those different categories. And you're right to bring up risk, right? And rating the agencies or the entities or the smart contracts even that issue these tokens. Because, you know, in the case of Tether, everyone knows now in 2021, they had this investigation with the DOJ, I think, and they ended up paying this $40 million fine because they couldn't necessarily back up the claims they were making on their website about this being backed one-to-one by US dollar. It was kind of US dollar and cash equivalents and paper notes and all this other kind of stuff that was not quite the claim they were making, right? So that was interesting. And I've heard lots of stories and speculation that they couldn't get auditors to audit their accounts, that kind of stuff. And, you know, even this month I saw now they're also being investigated by the federal government for, you know, things like AML, right? So that's a classic example of this fiat-backed one. You have a risk of that counterparty that's issuing the assets. So where do you see the risks in the other classes, you know, the other kind of ones you mentioned, specifically kind of also when we go to the algorithmic ones? Do you see the different risk factors coming
in? The algorithmic is the scientific papers. And Jack, I heard you have a scientific background also, more, or even Alec too.
We both do, yeah, yeah.
You sure. Both, okay, you both.
Nerds.
So, there are two, there's one thing is proven, just to make it clear, and that's why I will explain. It's proven that algorithmic stablecoins don't work in the long run. You find this
surprising.
Yes. That's why under MiCA EU regulation, algorithmic stablecoins are forbidden. Full stop. You cannot do it.
Wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah, you cannot do that. And that's good because we have this Terra Luna incident. Yeah, it's more the Terra Luna incident was exactly algorithmic stablecoin where you have a construction where you have a stable coin and then you have a governance token, and with the governance token they have a relation. You can when it's over collateralized, when for instance it's over 1.0, then you profit from it, and when it's under 1.0, the pegging to the US dollar, for instance, then people tend to sell it because it's a danger that they will lose more. And that happened to the Terra Luna token, and the collateral Luna token was not able to, the governance token could not save this currency. Mm-hmm. So we have this proof several times, and it's scientifically proven it doesn't work. So we will in future see no algorithmic stable coins. Yeah. there are some that die. Yeah, they're pegged to cryptos. Yeah, and real, it's called DAI, DAI. It has, by the way, a B plus rating by Blue Chip. Yeah, it's better.
Oh wow.
Yeah, yeah, but it's not a, it's a crypto pegged stablecoin, not algorithmic per se. It's not a pure algorithmic stablecoin. And you have wanted to have the risk. There's the crypto pact. Of course, you have more transparency because you see what's on chain going on. But still, what is all the transparency you have when the one of the Ether is hacked? Yeah, and we need another fork like 2016, and then you still have a problem when the underlying asset, the one, like if you have gold and fiat, if gold can produce in every kitchen now, yeah, then money will have a problem. Yeah, we cannot. Gold cannot be copied. You just can mine it. Bitcoin, you cannot be copied. You just can mine it. Similar.
Yeah. I get you. So like just to talk about, you know, the origins of crypto was about, like we said before, convenience, privacy, ownership in the digital age. And that sell versus, you know, traditional digital money is that we would say it's more instantaneous. There's lower fees. So you can do cross-border payments, all this kind of stuff, cheaper than, say, the old school monolithic style, you know, fiat-based money. And that's the sell of crypto. And we've said like stable coins in brackets, one of the benefits is tax-free, all this kind of stuff. But one of the bigger benefits people say is the lack of volatility. So enterprises feel more comfortable, you know, jumping into that space rather than crypto with lots of volatility. Lots of volatility, lots of uncertainty. And big part of it probably as well is, you know, whose door to knock on if something goes wrong. Like Terra has a headquarters, who's Bitcoin's headquarters, right? That's another reason. But people are pushing very heavily into stable coins.
There's more. I have a background of 15, 20 years in industry, energy industry and so on. I was head of the Austrian Energy Research Program. In 2015, we got the first research proposals on peer-to-peer energy blockchains. At the moment, I'm also on board of RDDL, the Riddle Foundation in Liechtenstein. We have a token, also a stable coin, pegged to, and now it comes, kilowatt hours. Yeah, but it's a unit of power, electric power, and it's pegged to that. And you can trade that. They produce mainly hardware, blockchain hardware for smart meters, for photovoltaic units that you can prove what you produce on your roof in industry, for instance, or private houses, ends up in the grid, and that you put on blockchain. You have a kind of, instead of utility companies, it's traded on blockchain. And the reason why we need it is, and now it comes, for instance, a company developed the car wallet, a wallet linked to the CAN bus electric system of a car. A car is a machine. Yeah, let's put it as a machine. When this car drives, this car could pay for their services itself, and then you cannot do this, or very complicated, with fiat money or cash. You cannot have a robot handing out the parking fee or handing out. You do it electronic way. You could it with digital currencies, but you have to actually do it in the long run with blockchain based currencies. And here, stablecoins could play an important role, because probably maybe you will not use Bitcoin for paying it and Lightning, whatever, too complicated. You need easy solutions. And stablecoin is a simple solution. And that's why it's nice.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point, right? Why do they, despite the risks that you've mentioned with even the biggest kind of fiat-backed stablecoins like Tether, USDC, Binance, USD.
Yeah.
I think it's out in the open. Everyone knows that there are some potential risks with these, and we have to put a lot of trust in the issuing entities. But they are so popular at the end of the day, right? And it's because of that utility, the ease of use, the fact that they do give you something that you don't get from the traditional crypto system. I find it interesting, you know, some people, I've heard people make the argument that although Bitcoin isn't a stable coin, it's backed in a sense by, you know, energy as an asset, or like power as an asset, because you're investing that in it.
The stability, of course, is relative. And that's it, different people with different, and that just information comes in. That why we need more information, more transparency. Regulation helps, organization like S&P or Blue Chip help, they rate that. And also the people dealing with it trusting in that system. And we are at the very beginning with stablecoins. This is the super start, the early start. But one fun fact with the cars, the problem is we live in a world, and why stablecoins will be much more important. We live in a world, unbelievable to me, where one car does not know where the other car is. We live, mm-hmm. and in 100, in 200 years, people will ask, how could they survive? Yeah, how could they survive one device not knowing where the other is? Isn't it super dangerous? It is. We know there is accidents. So when we have a machine economy, we need blockchain. We need these transfers. We need machines linked to wallets. That's why I'm the hardware guy, because I consider this very important. And you need decentralized cryptocurrency to pay. And you need decentralized, by the way, AI linked with it too, because you cannot all put on a server. And these tech devices we see, and these also cryptocurrencies help. They help to trade. And so, for instance, the car could then go to, and with autonomous driving, by the way, this will work. Yeah, you don't need Visa or MasterCard, but the machine itself has a wallet and the service directly linked. And that's why stablecoins make sense. But there's also, we mentioned the digital cryptocurrencies by central banks, the nation states try. Yeah. And I lived several years in China. I've also experienced the digital yuan. Yeah. EUN, and that's the good news for stablecoins. And then stablecoin issued, we have around 50 per day new stablecoins issued. The good thing is the government stablecoins or government digital currencies will fail. Yeah, the reason is, and there is a scientific paper also about this, by the Institute for Cryptoeconomics, Vienna. They proved that this digital currency by governments is minted by central banks. The problem is, here you don't have any collateral, because by definition, fiat is not anymore collateralized. So people just believe that state or that nation, that they behave well. And so there is no collateral, and nobody checks it, because there is, maybe some checks and balances, but very limited. So stable coins have the advantage that they have to prove that they have these collaterals, whereas government not.
That's an interesting point. I want to bring up the topic of CBDCs, because that's in my mind like an oversimplification of the two things I was trying to lead on to, was that, you know, crypto is convenient digital money that's decentralized. Stable coins are more stable, less volatile, and they typically have a central point of issuance and control in a way, right? Be that an algorithm or a company, whatever it is. And like, if you were to do a really simplified kind of distinction, it would be that the only difference between a stablecoin and a CBDC is that the point of issuance with a stablecoin is a private company, and the point of issuance with a CBDC is a government. And then you're talking about trust, and the whole point is all of these things need some kind of backer, some kind of trusted entity. And it's like, who do you trust more? A private company in America whose motivation is a profit, or say the US banking system? And at that point that you made there is quite interesting about the backing and what is the thing that's pegging it. Mm-hmm. And if you are the same entity that can print money overnight, like, is the peg that safe? But say if we were to do a CBDC that's based on gold, for example, I don't know how possible that is, but do you think that would get around that idea?
I think the gold pegging is history. We will not see a gold pegging. Mm-hmm. I don't see it. I've read about it, that there is the idea. I don't think that we go there. But I think that the first trial of the central bank digital currencies, it's digital, it's not crypto, it's not central bank cryptocurrencies, by the way, because there is no crypto, there is no blockchain usually behind all these ideas. Even the European Central Bank that doesn't at the moment use, as far as I know, blockchain. The problem is that when the governments, like in real world with fiat money, do a good job, they don't print too much money, they keep inflation low at 2 to 4%, 2 in Europe and the West, 4% in China, that's a healthy growth, healthy inflation, and they don't print too much money, which devalues the currency, then people anyway have trust. The problem is in government money and government probably, and the digital currency is fine. We all have this risk management. It's not because of the sunny days, but it's the stormy days when, for instance, we have these black swan events, Ukraine war, Palestine, I don't know, climate catastrophic events, maybe catastrophic events in Asia, China, Taiwan. We don't know how it's going there. And then these systems start getting weak. They could. And the question is how these weaknesses then turn out. Can we still trust For instance, the Chinese yuan, renminbi, can we trust the US dollar? What is interesting is that the US, it said that they will use the dollar US dollar dominance. Mm-hmm. But with stable coins, this is will be the opposite. So at the moment, the US government so far, yeah, we will have soon election in some days, are not unhappy that there's stable coins out there, because for every stable coin issued and is so popular, US dollar is also paid. Yeah, and it's huge.
Exactly. It's kind of almost a way of potentially propping up the value proposition of the US dollar. Is if all our crypto is denominated in it effectively, then that's another reason. It's similar to people, you know, in other countries storing reserves in US dollar in historical kind of global finance, right? And I think you've raised an interesting point that I think brings this whole conversation full circle, right? Because now you're saying, in the realm of CBDC, it's almost like a special case, as Alec was saying. It's a special case virtually of a stable coin. And yeah, I kind of agree and disagree with the blockchain thing, because I think plenty of governments aren't necessarily thinking of using an actual blockchain solution to implement CBDC. But obviously, in theory, it's perfectly possible. And I know there are actually countries that have either looked at it or are kind of in early stages. So it's one that can go either way. But it raises that question of, you know, in some countries, particularly if you're in the West, the value of a stable coin in general might not be that much different to having a CBDC version of your fiat currency. Whereas if you're in a country with hyperinflation, then actually trusting a company like Tether might be better than trusting your own government with your own money, right? What is your kind of major prediction for this space in general, like for the use cases of stable coins, for which kind of form will dominate, where that might come from? Kind of what's your outlook on the industry trends as you see them?
Oh, definitely we will see stable coins to stay. They are here to stay. They will outperform government-issued stable coins or CBDCs. And of course, they will gain a lot of more of importance, especially when we are more towards a machine economy, machine-to-machine communication, machine-to-machine payment. Yeah, one machine pays the other. Because we think humans always interact, but we have machines negotiating prices in future and in the near future, and it happens already. And so this market will be huge. It will be definitely beyond trillions. Yeah, it could exceed. And of course, I think stable coins will be issued at the moment by companies, by private companies. That's also where money started. The Fed started as a private company, by the way. Yeah, it's not a governmental full. It became closer to the government to regulate money. Was always first private, and then the government came in. And what is interesting is whether they, after the fail of the governmental digital currencies, maybe they will adopt some countries. I would see that they adopt their own cryptocurrencies. With China is interesting. They have the digital yuan, not because they wanted to be so innovative, but this was the answer to Bitcoin and especially to Facebook with their Libra coin in the 2019, 20. So this was an answer, but then in the West, they said, oh, they do implement this EU digital yuan. So when we have to pay the Chinese for our machines and cars and computers, we are then into their system, because otherwise we cannot pay, because they have our data then. So it's a fight for identities, where the West wants to have it more privacy dominated. China, of course, full control, full transparency, but also full ID. And that's two clash of cultures. Yeah, that's a big clash.
I think you're right. It will probably, you know, maybe it's not so surprising, we'll probably see a similar mirroring of, you know, geopolitics in the stablecoin and crypto space that we already have, right? Different cultures will approach these things different ways. So yeah, I think it's one of those kind of watch this space moments. And actually, you know, when we talk about predictions, I think we've seen a lot of things go wrong already with stablecoins. Like we mentioned Terra Luna, we've mentioned the issues around Tether potentially. So yeah, I think we're actually maybe even slightly more mature than other aspects of crypto. So listen, Robbie, I've really, really enjoyed this conversation. And if you're happy, we're going to spring two little ending questions on you here that we like to ask everyone. So if you're ready, I'll ask you the first one. So in just one sentence, and I will stress one sentence because we like to clip these up and make sure they're really punchy. So in one sentence, What is Web3 to you?
Web3 is the solution of blockchain-based transfer of wealth, of value. We have old economy where you transfer information, and Web3, you can transfer value, and that's wonderful.
Nice. I like that. That's a really succinct one. Okay, and then the final question then is, so let's say you're having a dinner party and you want to invite a guest. Now, they can be, you know, someone on the planet today. They can be throughout history, any historical figure, or maybe it's someone fictional. And you want to talk to them at the dinner party about Web3. So who are you going to pick for that dinner party and why? Just one person.
I would pick a random person from the street and ask usually, have you heard from crypto? And then I get the answer, maybe, and this is a surprise, the answer, yeah, of course, I mean, whatever. And that we bond because we are kind of the community, and then we would bond. And if not, I would explain to the person, yeah, what I explained already, what blockchain is. The community aspect is so strong, and that bonding, our bonding over the same topic that we speak now, we three here, that is where blockchain goes. It's community. It's not technology so much, because that's an underlying asset we need. It's a lot community, and of course, like meme coins and other coins, it's fun, and stable coins, it's easy, simple solution. And that I would talk to that person, and of course, maybe we could find a common ground, and maybe we would exchange suggestions, and then we go maybe for a beer or coffee together to talk about this crypto stuff.
I like that. I mean, I think most people tend to think of like the big celebrities to get at their dinner party, but it's quite nice that you'll have a different dinner party every night, basically, by choosing someone random off the street. I think it's also important for the space, though, as well. And like, we're often speaking to, you know, the 1% of people that are familiar with crypto and Web3 and all this stuff. But really, for this, you know, this agenda to really get into the mainstream needs to know about it. So we need to be getting it across to normal, everyday people. I think when you start to randomly select people off the street and they understand, you know, the value of crypto and stable coins and CBDCs, that's when we're really going to make it. But yeah, thanks, Robbie. This has been an excellent episode. I've learned so much. I really understand like the value proposition of stable coins versus CBDCs and the risks that come between those two things. And you know, maybe we have you on again to actually like dive into CBDCs and meme coins as well in the future. But yeah, thank you for listening, wherever you may be, and join us next time to untangle a little more of Web3. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Untangling Web3.
Don't forget to send us your thoughts, questions, and comments on social media. And be sure to follow us on your favorite podcast provider to catch the next episode. See you next time to untangle a little bit more of Web3.
The views we express here are our own and do not reflect the views of our employers.